You are listening to WRCE 1450 AM, W299 CD, Richland Center.
Start your day off on the right foot with great local programming on Sunrise from the Center on WRCE.
On our morning show from WRCO and WRCE, we're pleased to have Richland School District Administrator Steve Board to join us here, despite a snowy day. Thanks for coming in, Steve.
Yeah, you bet. It's treacherous out there, so everybody out there be safe. It's slick. There's no doubt about it, but I'm glad I could be here.
For area school officials, it was kind of a no-brainer. Well, you know, you didn't have to think too much about this storm, did you?
Yeah, isn't that the truth? You know, when I was a transportation director and business official, that John Bosworth now has that role. You know, this was the worst part of the job, calling off school, trying to figure out, is it going to miss us? Is it going to hit us? Where is it going to be? The timing's always awful, but this was John's first call as a transportation director, and it was an absolute no-brainer. I don't ever remember getting to call off school at 2:30 the prior day, but when you have an imminent storm coming in, it's easy to make that call, and area schools around, obviously everybody just followed suit and jumped on it. It obviously held true. The thing is, you know, if they're calling for 10, 11 inches, even if they're off by 4 or 5 inches, you're still going to get dumped on, right? And mm-hmm. So it's still going to be treacherous travel. It's when you get that 1 to 3 or possible freezing rain or drizzle. Those are the really difficult calls to make, and it's not a fun part of the job, but this particular one seemed to work out okay.
Right. Those are the ones where people can second guess and like, hey, we didn't get anything. Why did they call off school? I mean, it's a tough one.
Yeah, correct. You're truly just trying to guess on what's going to happen. You take a lot of the experts' opinion, the National Weather Service out of La Crosse, Charlie Shortino with WeatherNet in Madison, the local news stations, gather all the information you can. It's nice now that we have kind of a consortium of local district administrators around the area, and so we can stay in communication via text on what other schools are thinking, what the roads are like in their areas. When we're all kind of on the same page, it does make those decisions go a little bit smoother, but it's also, everybody's unique, right? I mean, what's going on in the hills of Highland are not necessarily the same as what's going on in the Kickapoo Valley, and so everybody does have to analyze their own specific road conditions uniquely. And, you know, some of the school districts around, the Richland School District included, we have such a vast amount of space that our students can reside in. You know, you talk about going all the way to the north up to, you know, near the county line, and certainly all the way to the west of the county line. There's a lot of space that the Richland School District occupies. And so, again, what may be happening in just north of the river, down near Muscaday, could be entirely different, you know, 25 miles north as we get closer to Hillsborough. And so we've got to consider all of that as well, and the side roads and all of the roads that the buses have to travel to pick up our students and get them here safely and to get them home safely, right? And so safety is always the first and foremost. I always thought it was easier to tell someone why we called off school than to try to explain why we didn't. And so I think we do probably err on the side of safety. By the same token, we want to make sure that kids are in school learning and keeping that continuity going as well. So we're trying to find that balance every day.
We salute the snowplow drivers and also the school bus drivers. There are some roads in your district where I don't even like to drive them. I'm with my Pontiac Vibe on a summer day.
Isn't that the truth?
They're narrow and everything else.
Narrow, so. Sharp turns, blind corners, blind driveways, all sorts of things going on, as well as other drivers on the road. You know, that our Cobison, the drivers at Cobison, as you mentioned, the city township workers that keep our roads safe, they're actually a huge part of us making the decision. We're often times making phone calls to the county people who are out on the roads. What's you know, at 5:30 in the morning, what's it look like? What are you seeing? And they play a viable role in making that decision. But they do a tremendous job in keeping our roads safe. Obviously, on days like today, they're going to have their work cut out for them. But if everybody just slows down and takes it easy, we should be able to get to where we're going safely.
We have a lot to talk about, Steve. You had a special meeting last Thursday and a referendum possibly in the air. So
yeah,
I guess Where do we start?
Yeah, where do we start? We've talked about this before in terms of what was coming, and now it's kind of all coming to fruition right now. Just to give listeners kind of a little bit of a backstory, the Richland School District, when they went to referendum in 2016, they had a small recurring referendum, just under $475,000, I believe is what it was. And I know that may not seem small to the normal person, but when you're talking to $25, $30 million budget, it certainly isn't a large amount. That was particularly for technology, as well as a little over $8 million referendum to upgrade safety and security in our buildings. At that time, we had five buildings. We were also maintaining Rockbridge. And so that's what that money was used for in 2016. The debt on that particular loan, that $8 million loan, was not scheduled to have any principal paid off until the 25-26 school year. And so the first 11 years of that loan were structured in a way that no principal was being paid off. We were literally making $225,000 payments every year towards interest only. And so when 2020 came along, the school district was right in the middle of declining enrollment. There's about an 11-year phase out as our upper classes, our higher number classes, as they were filtering through the system and eventually graduating, we were replacing them with lower numbered classes. And again, this doesn't have anything to do with open enrollment in or out. This is truly school-age children living in our district, the number of students under age 18 living in the Richland School District. As we saw, we were right in the middle of this decline in enrollment. We saw that we had a big need financially just to be able to maintain the programming that we were doing. And so the voters in the community were gracious enough to pass a $1.25 million recurring referendum in 2020. And that allowed us to continue from 2020 until current state to maintain our programming without having to make significant cuts. It didn't necessarily mean that we weren't going to reduce in some areas as these smaller classes came through, but we weren't going to have to make significant changes. However, we also told the voters at that time that this was a 4 or 5 year Band-Aid because that was only going to get us through a portion of time. We didn't know what the state was going to do with the budget. The first couple of biennial budgets, the state did not give any additional money or very little additional money. This past biennial budget, the state did give a little bit more, which was certainly helpful for school districts, but it certainly wasn't enough to make up of all the lost income that they didn't receive over the years. At that time, the school district also looked at going to referendum for a capital project of about $27 million, where they were going to add on to what was then Doudna, the middle school, and do some improvements to Lincoln and Jefferson as well, and keep the buildings that we had. That failed. A referendum again failed in the spring of 2021, a reduced referendum. And as a result, the school consolidated buildings. We reduced our footprint from five buildings down to three. We moved the seventh and eighth graders up to the high school. And that was kind of a result of trying to be more efficient and trying to get right-sized in terms of the buildings that we needed to have. Fast forward now to 2024. The $1.25 million in recurring referendum money that we said was a Band-Aid, this is the last year that will prove to be financially solvent for us. We will be facing a deficit next year as ESSER money has reached that financial cliff that will be falling off, and we will be forced to make changes in our programming and in the number of people that we have if we don't pass an operational referendum. However, when the referendum from 2016, I bring that back, that $8 million, the district started to do a strategy, what's called defeasance, and we started to prepay some of the debt. I mentioned we were making interest-only payments and scheduled to make interest-only payments through 25-26. We started making principal payments on that loan in 2021. And that has allowed us to prepay about half of that debt before we were scheduled to make a penny of principal payment on it. It also allowed us to stabilize the mill rate at $9.12 per thousand on average for property owners in the school district. By doing so, We've now got this defeasance has allowed us to go back to referendum and be able to do an operational referendum without any additional tax increase to the public. And so the first component of a referendum, the first question that the school board had to decide whether they not they wanted to pursue, was a $2.5 million referendum for operational purposes. Our staff, our teachers, our custodians, our food servers, all of them are underpaid comparatively. We often lose employees to neighboring school districts from a teaching standpoint. We often have teachers that teach numerous years here and then go finish their career at a neighboring district where they can make a little bit more money. That disheartens me that we are losing quality people to neighboring school districts. And I'm a huge proponent of public education throughout, but I want our teachers to stay part of the Richland School District, and that's not happening. And in addition, even though we use some ESSER dollars to give our hourly employees a $3 raise, and they were drastically underpaid back in 2020, the private sector has done an equal amount of raises to their hourly employees. And so once again, we're faced with a situation where we have a difficult time hiring support staff. We have a difficult time hiring aides to work in our classrooms with our students. We have a difficult time finding custodial cooks, those folks, because they can typically make more money, significantly more money in the private sector. And so I approached our board about a year ago, and I'm sure I've said this on the show, that I really wanted a referendum. If we were going to go to it, I wanted it to not be a Band-Aid. I wanted it to be about people, property, and programming. I wanted it to be about the people that work for our district, paying them competitive wages. Like, it doesn't have to necessarily be higher than the factories or any of that stuff, but we do have to stop losing employees to neighboring districts and to the private sector simply because we're $1.50 per hour less than what they can make in doing those jobs. I want to become the Richland School District to become the District of Envy. And in order to do that, we have to have things that people are envious of. And that includes salary, that includes wages, it includes the culture, the climate, it includes the facilities, it includes everything that becomes part of why people come to work, right? Financially, it's certainly a big part of it, but people will also come to work if they enjoy coming to work. They'll work for a place that they enjoy working for. I can honestly say that I love my job. There isn't a day that goes by that I don't laugh with my coworkers, and I consider them professional friends and people I love. I want everybody in the school district to have that same mentality, but we do have to make sure that we compensate people accordingly. And so this operational referendum would be in the amount of $2.5 million, and that would be at no tax rate increase to the public because of the defeasance strategies, the prepayment of debt strategies that the district implemented back in 2020, 2021. We were able to add that on without any tax increase. Okay, and so that will be a huge benefit to not only our the people of our district and the programming, the opportunities that we provide our students, but it should also be a benefit to the taxpayers that they don't have to have additional tax burden onto their tax bill. And so with that, that's the first question, is an operational referendum centered around $2.5 million. The second part of it was a capital improvement project. Because the 2020 referendums and 2021 referendums failed, the district is still facing deferred maintenance needs. We've talked about it on the show that the new high school is pushing 30 years old. It's not a new building anymore. Our custodial and maintenance crew have done a fantastic job of keeping all of our buildings very up to date and looking great and clean. But the fact of the matter is things do wear out. Roofing wears out. We have a 30-year roof on our high school. That's over a $3 million project. We've been able to take three quarters of that, and we've been able to be fiscally responsible and pay for that out of budget. But we're simply at a point where we can't pay for any more. And that's just the roof at one building. That does not have anything to do with carpeting that needs to be replaced. We've got old lighting throughout our district. We've got windows, wooden windows in our intermediate school that are from, you know, the 1990s. They're very poorly energy efficient windows. We have doors that are rusting out. We have a lot of deferred maintenance needs. We have blacktop and parking lots that need to be updated. We have a lot of deferred maintenance needs that simply need to be addressed. We simply have not had the money out of budget to pay for it. I often get asked, you know, by community members, why doesn't the district plan for that? Why doesn't the district set aside money so that when a roof needs to be replaced, that they have the money set aside that they can play it? That's what you pay for it. That's what you and I would do with our own, you know, homes and things like that. We would plan for an air conditioning replacement. We would plan for a roofing replacement. We would plan for sidewalk replacement. That all sounds great, and that is something that the district could do. But in order for the district to set aside probably $1.5 million a year to plan for these expenses, that would come at the expense of the opportunities that we offer our students or people that we employ in our district. $1.5 million, somewhere between $1.5 million and $2 million, this would be something that would cost us somewhere between 15 and 20 employees, right? I don't feel that it's in our district's best interest or our students' best interest to reduce our staff by 20 people, you know, $2 million, simply so that we can save money for a roof in 20 years, okay, or 30 years. And this is a problem that happens throughout all of Wisconsin, the way public schools are funded and the way that the state revenue system works, okay? And so when school districts have deferred maintenance, unfortunately, they have to go to referendum. Cities and counties and other municipalities, they have other ways to generate money through the way they can borrow money without a referendum. Schools have to go to referendum, which is why you see school districts across the state having to go to these kind of referendums. So we knew that this was coming forward. We knew that this was something that was going to be happening. So then the question is, how and what? How big of a referendum do we look at going? When do we go? What do we do? Fast forward to last December, and the board entertained a motion to hire the Morris Leatherman Company. This is a company out of the Twin Cities to conduct a public survey. And they do it the old-fashioned way. They make phone calls to people that reside in the Richland School District. And this is not, you know, I'm just going to start calling 400 people, and the first 400 people I get, and if they all happen to be, you know, 35-year-old, you know, white males with school-age children, then that's the group we're going to take. No, they look at the demographics of the county. They look at the demographics of the residents of the school district, and they make sure that they hit with statistical accuracy every demographic group. The retired folks, the people in their 70s, the people who are 21 without any children that just graduated and are residing in our community, and the school-age parents with or without children in our district. And they succeeded. They called 400 people. They conducted a phone survey. It took about 7 or 8 minutes. And last Thursday at the special board meeting, the Morris Leatherman group, Peter Leatherman himself presented remotely with the findings of that survey. And I can summarize them here in a little bit, but I would encourage anyone who has any interest in it. Peter Leatherman just did a fantastic job at presenting the data. He's got 30 plus years of experience. He's incredibly credible. He was very articulate in the way he spoke, and he did it in a way that everyone can understand. That presentation is uploaded into our board meeting packets for both the last board meeting on January 4th and then last night's board meeting on January 8th. It's also on the district YouTube page. The entire presentation is uploaded on there. And I believe, although I cannot say with 100% certainty, that Rod Perry and Nova Video have linked that to their YouTube page as well, which is where many of the school board meetings are housed at. So there's an opportunity for the public to hear that information. But if I could summarize that data, Peter Leatherman stated that as he called the 400 people, he identified essentially 9 different areas that the community wanted to support. Okay. That ranged from, and this is kind of in order, from the top priority as indicated by the public all the way down to the least priority, safety and security, amongst our buildings. All of our stakeholders want safe and secure buildings. And even though we did a safety and security upgrade in 2016, there are still upgrades that could happen to make our buildings and our students and our staff more secure. And in light of the recent shooting in Iowa, it kind of brings back to forefront, we can never be too safe in our buildings, and we want to make sure that our students are safe. So that was the number one priority from the public. ADA compliance was number two from our public. Getting our facilities to meet ADA code. We have old buildings, primarily at the primary school, formerly known as Doudna, and the intermediate school, formerly known as the middle school. Those are older buildings. They lack some of the ADA requirements that are needed. Even our 30-year-old, quote-unquote, new high school has ADA issues. While it may is all on one level, and ramps are not necessarily the issue, that's kind of what we think about. At the high school, we lack the ability for someone in a wheelchair to get down to the pole vaulting pit to watch a track and field event or the shot putting and discus area. There's no ADA ramp for them to be able to get to that area. They would have to try to maneuver through potentially muddy, hilly, uneven ground and grass. That's a problem. All of our buildings, our bathrooms, need upgrades. Many of the bathrooms are completely uncompliant with ADA code. Someone in a wheelchair or someone who is disabled would struggle to be able to use the restrooms in the same way that somebody without that disability would be able to use that. That's problematic. So ADA compliance was the number two thing. Upgrades to our technology, tech ed department at the high school was the number three priority. We have a rural school, okay, a school district. We have a rural school community. Our community wants people who graduate from Richland Center High School with employability skills, but they also want them to be adept at basic tech ed skills, right? We have a lot of people that go into mechanics, welding, farming, the business aspect of tech ed, the family and consumer science part of tech ed. Our school district lacks some of these things. When we built that building in 1996, our tech ed labs were probably state of the art. Since then, our tech ed department has gone through several waves, from the elimination of the FACE or quote unquote home ec classes to bringing those back. But now our tech ed labs, our welding centers are out of date. The exhaust systems are non-compliant. We don't have good lifts for our students who want to work on vehicles to be able to do that safely. And so that's a problem. So that was the third priority that the community recognized. Air conditioning has been a contentious topic. Back in 2016, with that referendum, the original proposal was that they would add air conditioning to the then Jefferson and then Doudna school districts. Okay. When that referendum scope came back and we were forced the bids came in too high to be able to do everything that the district wanted to do with that $8 million. And there was a meeting, an open meeting, the minutes are recorded, where the board had to decide what were we going to do in regards to air conditioning. If we do air conditioning, something else is coming off the docket. And if we don't do air conditioning, then we can do it. They decided to stick with the safety and security of our buildings and getting some roofs done on our other buildings. There wasn't enough money to be able to do air conditioning at both buildings, and so they elected to not choose which building between Jefferson and Doudna they were going to do, and they elected to not put air conditioning in either and to use that money with safety and security and upgrades, okay? Again, that was done at a public meeting. But I know in 2020, because I was directly involved in that referendum, that was one of the things that we heard from the public. You told us you were going to do air conditioning in 2016. You didn't do that. How can we trust that the district's going to use that money again? The fact is that while it was originally something that was going to be talked about, the board did vote to not do air conditioning, but it was clearly not communicated as well as it should have been in 2016. So there was a misperception that the district didn't do what they were supposed to do. But perception is reality, and the reality is that there's contention out there that we didn't get this air conditioning fixed and get it installed, and we have to make that right, okay? And so air conditioning in the primary school and the intermediate school are number four, and that's certainly a priority of the district. We want to make sure that all of our buildings have air conditioning so that we can have a comfortable learning environments for our students and those hot days, but also we have a lot of staff that work full year-round and teachers who come in during the summer, and we want them to have a comfortable environment as well. Number five was air quality and energy efficiency. I mentioned the exhaust hoods in the welding center. The way those exhaust systems were set up, it blows the fumes and the material right past the user's face. The new exhaust systems lift the stuff up from behind, instead of lifting it up from above past the face, it pulls it backwards away from the user into an exhaust system. So that's one example of how we can make our systems more safe. Better filtering systems, as we saw after the pandemic and with COVID, you know, to be able to have better filtering systems throughout our air conditioning, or our HVAC, our heating and cooling units, as well as being energy efficient. I mentioned the windows. We have several doors that don't have good seals on them. They don't close properly. Not only is that a safety issue, but it's certainly on days like today, I'm sure that you can feel a draft in many of those areas, and that just creates higher energy costs from a heating standpoint. Number six was then to complete the roofing and the parking lots in hard surface areas. We have loading docks at our buildings that the concrete, again, is 30 years old. We have parking lots that, while we've tried to maintain them, they simply need to be replaced. The potholes in the parking lot up at the high school and in other buildings are really problematic and really quite dangerous. So we've got to get that done. Roofing, we've got to get that last phase completed at the high school. It's estimated to come in at about $1.5 million after inflation. We're hoping that can be done a little bit cheaper than that, but that's the initial estimates for what the roofing at the high school to get the rest of the roof done. At that point, all of our buildings will have new roofs on them that were done from, I believe, 2018 or recent. So we should be in a pretty good spot from a roofing standpoint for the next 15 to 20 years. And then number seven was auditorium upgrades. And so, again, our auditorium is 30 years old. Much of the equipment in the auditorium is old, original equipment that is now outdated. It doesn't have LED lighting. The sound system is not where it needs to be. Our stage, much of the plywood floor, some of that is original flooring. That becomes a safety issue as well. The carpeting in there is showing its signs of wear and tear. So there's a lot of auditorium upgrades that could happen. Number eight was some athletics upgrades, some artificial turf on the football field, other baseball dugouts, I believe, were something that was considered. That was the eighth thing. And then number nine was general deferred maintenance. So when the survey was done, kind of bringing this full circle with the Morris Leatherman Group, number nine was actually the addition of building a new field house or auditorium additions, dressing rooms, things like that. That was number nine. When that survey was done, Peter Leatherman spoke, and he said, he goes, the community will support all nine of these things. You have over 50% support in all nine of these things. However, when you weigh out what they would like to see supported based on what they can financially afford, those two don't necessarily align. In a conversation that I had with them, they used the analogy, we would all love to be able to buy our children $500 worth of items every Christmas, right? But the reality is, even though we would like to do that, and we would find joy in giving that to them, the impact on the pocketbook is such that we can't afford to do that. So the financial implications of what we can afford as a public and what we would like to see don't necessarily always align. And so when they weighed that out, What Peter Leatherman had suggested was that we have an average home, property value home in the Richland School District of $161,000. If you can keep the impact to those property owners at $15 a month or less, and you stick to the top priorities as identified by the community, you have high support for passing a referendum. If you start going down the things that aren't as supported, or you go beyond the $15 mark, that's when you're going to be run into problems. People will not find support in that. They will not find things that you want to have. They will support things that you need. Okay, and if I could summarize the entire survey, that would be it. The community will support the things that you need to have.
Stay tuned for the second half of today's morning show program on Sunrise from the Center on WRCE. Coming up, though, in just a moment.
Laminated cover and bound with those collector calendars, they're available from any board of directors of the Richland County Historical Society for just $6 as a donation from the general public. Historical Society members, you can obtain the 2024 calendar for just $4 as a donation. Get yours as soon as possible. Schools of Richland County, a 2024 calendar from the Richland County Historical Society. Look us up on the web, Richland County Historical Society.weebly.com.
WRCO 100.9 FM, Richland Center.
Good morning. WRCO News Time at 6:30 is sponsored by Bailey Paint and Decorating, your full-line Benjamin Moore dealer with quality paint and expert advice, and by Chet's Feed, Seed and Such, the friendly feed store. Today's forecast calls for a high of 31 for tonight. More snow, maybe 1 to 2 inches. Some isolated areas could get 3. A low of 21, Thursday 29, and then Friday another 3 to 5 inches. Maybe an inch or so possible Thursday night into Friday, and then more. Right now, the WRCO studios, after between 7.5 and 8 inches of snow here yesterday, we're at 31 degrees.
Bailey Paint and Decorating reminds you the perfect color should be enjoyed for years to come. Extraordinarily durable Benjamin Moore paint and exterior stain ensure just that. Bailey Paint and Benjamin Moore know getting the right product is the secret to success. Bailey Paint and Decorating ensures you'll have the right color and products and offers the best paint you can buy in Benjamin Moore paint products. Bailey Paint and Decorating, Court Street, downtown Richland Center, your Benjamin Moore headquarters.
From the Civic Media News Desk, I am Phil Nee, and here is what you need to know. The snow emergency in the city of Richland Center will end at 7 o'clock this morning. The Village of Muscadet announced their snow removal emergency that is underway until 10 this morning. Off-street parking in Muscadet is available at the laundromat parking lot, the swimming pool, the parking lot at Riverside Park by the boat landing. No parking is allowed on any village street during the hours of the snow removal emergency in the Village of Muscadet. Emergency room physicians note an increase in individuals experience heart attacks, chest discomfort, and various heart-related issues due to shoveling. For older adults with high blood pressure, elevated cholesterol, or obesity, medical experts recommend seeking assistance for snow removal tasks, especially with the wet and heavy snow that we've had. But if you must, don't wait until it stops snowing, they say, to shovel it all. It is too heavy. Avoid throwing snow. Instead, slowly push it. And while you're out there, make sure that your dryer vent and the exhaust pipes for your furnace and hot water heater are clear of snow. It looks like we'll have more snow later this week, so you'll get more chances to practice. Police say two boys who were hospitalized last week after falling through the ice on a Madison area pond have died. Sun Prairie police say the 8-year-old and 6-year-old were hospitalized Friday in critical condition after first responders pulled them from a retention pond. Sun Prairie police said this week that one of the boys died over the weekend. The Wisconsin State Journal reported that the other boy's death was confirmed on Monday by the Dane County Medical Examiner, according to an assistant police chief. A major battery manufacturer announces the closure of its second southern Wisconsin plant.
The shutdown of the Energizer plant in the city of Portage will lead to the layoff of 135 employees there. letter sent by Energizer to the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development states the layoffs will be permanent, with the first wave of them starting on March 5th. The company says in the letter the layoffs will continue through the following months until the plant closes in December. Last October, Energizer announced the closure of their plant in Fenimore, which will leave another 172 of the company's employees out of work when that facility shuts down in September. Ted Ahlen, Wisconsin Radio Network.
The number of Wisconsin dairy farms continues to fall as the industry embraces larger herd sizes. Wisconsin lost 455 dairy farms in 2023, according to statistics from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Wisconsin lost 50 farms in April, 48 in October, and 47 in July. Minnesota lost 58 dairy farms in November and 34 in August. Minnesota lost 146 dairy farms between January 1st and the end of November, putting both states on track or that chance to lose 7.4% of their dairy farms in 2023. The USDA says the nation has about 2% more dairy cows than a decade ago, but there are fewer dairy cattle than a year ago and fewer farmers managing those cattle. U.S. Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection and Farm Service Agency Director Joanne Cooley in Richland Center reminds foreign investors they must report U.S. agricultural land holdings. The Agricultural Foreign Investment Disclosure Act requires foreign investors who buy, sell, or hold an interest in U.S. agricultural land to report their holdings and transactions to the USDA with the FSA County Office, where the land is located, within 90 days after the transaction. A report form, FSA 153, should be filed to report holdings of agricultural land totaling 10 acres or more used for farming, ranching, or timber production, including leaseholds of 10 years. The reports are also required when there are changes in land use, such as agricultural to non-agricultural use, or when there is a change in the status of ownership. The information from the AFIDA is used to prepare an annual report to the President and Congress on the effect of foreign land holdings on family farms and rural communities in the United States. Assistance in completing the report can be obtained from your local FSA office. Contact Richland County's office at 608-647-8874, extension 2, or visit farmers.gov. State Senator Brad Paff announced that Emma Duell of LaFarge High School has been accepted to the 2024 Senate Scholar Program. This week-long intensive program allows high school juniors and seniors from around the state of Wisconsin to learn more about the legislative process at the state capitol. Throughout the week, state scholars will meet with legislators along with legislative support agencies, staff, the governor's staff, a Supreme Court justice, the media, lobbyists, and many others who work in the Capitol. When the Senate is on the floor, Senate scholars staff the session under the direction of the Senate Sergeant-at-Arms office. Their activities culminate in a mock legislative hearing on a bill that the Senate scholars have drafted. A Wisconsin judge has ruled that state law does not allow the use of mobile absentee voting sites, siding with Republicans who had challenged Racine's use of a voting van that traveled around the city in 2022. Republicans opposed the use of the van, the only one of its kind in Wisconsin, saying its use was against the law, increased the chances of voter fraud, and was used to bolster Democratic turnout. The Democratic National Committee joined with Racine and state elections officials in defending the use of the van, but the judge ruled this week that there is no authority in state law for such mobile voting sites.
Hello, friends. It's Ellie from Chex. We are excited to be a supplier for Next Level Super Premium Dog Food. We have a variety of dog food fit for every dog's nutritional needs. Stop down today and let us share with you the benefits of Next Level Dog Food. And as always, you're looking good today.
Here's a look at cancellations and delays and otherwise today, weather-related, after the big storm yesterday. Two-hour delays for these schools. Ithaca will have a two-hour delay with no AM4K. Fenimore, LaFarge, the Richland District, all 2 hours late. In Richland, this includes St. Mary's and Eagle, and there's no AM Early Childhood and no Bethlehem Lutheran 4K. The River Valley District is delayed 2 hours. That includes St. Luke's and St. John's. Riverdale, Waseca Steuben, Weston will be starting at 9:50 this morning. Boscobel has a 2 hour delay. There is no early release. Dismissal times will be 3:20 for the elementary students and 3:25 for the middle high school students later today. Vark Roots will be running 2 hours late today as the cleanup continues after the storm. And in Richland County, meal sites will be open and there will be home-delivered meals. The only exception is the Germantown location, which will be closed and there will be no home deliveries. Grant County meal sites will be closed. There will be no home deliveries and the bus and taxi services are canceled. And another reminder, the Richland Center landfill will be closed today. The forecast includes a high of 31, still a bit warmer than normal for this time of year. Snow likely again tonight, 1 to 2 inches, possibly 3 in some areas, and a low of 21. Advanced Pump and Well Solutions does it all, including well pump repair service, pressure tank replacement, new well and pressure system installations, water tests, well chlorination, typically same-day service. They are respected throughout this part of the state, and they have a lot of pull. Chris Jarr on his International Tractor and Larry Ferguson on his Oliver. Who has the most pull? Stop at Advanced Pump and Well Solutions in Richland Center and find out more. Or call them at 608-649-4488.
Dunkin' Reward members can look forward to the fresh offers in the new year, including a $2 medium hot or iced coffee, limit one per member per day. Triple points when boosted members place an order through the mobile app on Wednesdays, and 100 bonus points for all members who place an order through the mobile app on Mondays. Those who aren't Dunkin' Rewards members can sign up for free on the Dunkin' app or by visiting DunkinRewards.com. Get a free medium beverage with your first purchase, so quick sign up and start earning free Dunkin' today. And remember, Richland Center runs on Dunkin'.
Sports Time, sponsored by the Richland Hospital, specializing in rural health care since 1924, making a difference by caring, educating, and healing. And by the Homesteader Store, Southern Wisconsin's tractor experts. Coming up, some notes on sports. The Bucks will get back to action here soon. And also Marquette and the Badger men's basketball teams getting set for big games this evening.
Richland Hospital was recently recognized with a 5-star rating for patient experience. Patients were surveyed by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services on numerous aspects of their care experience, including how attentive their nurses were, the cleanliness of the facility, and how well they understood what their plan of care would be after they left the hospital. A 5-star rating is the highest score possible. Thank you, Richland area community, for trusting us with your care.
High school games in our immediate area called off last night, including Reedsburg and Richland Center, and also River Ridge and Waseca Steuben, Fenimore and Iowa Grant, and Boscobel and Riverdale. The games that went on were Central and also Northern Wisconsin games, which is usually the other way around, but we had the snow yesterday. Also in boys basketball, games that were canceled, including Argyle and Highland, Brookwood and Royal, Mauston and River Valley. The Ithaca-Seneca game moved to January 18th. North Crawford and Kickapoo and Wisconsin Dells and Westby among the casualties because of the big storm yesterday. Wisconsin National Guard Yellow Jacket Women's Athlete of the Week this week is, for the second time this season, former River Valley standout Charlotte Furstall. In her only game of the week, the Yellow Jacket women's basketball team overwhelmed Northland by a score of 82-31. Furstall was front and center, playing only 16 minutes. Furstall tied for the team lead with 10 points, shooting 5 of 9 from the field, also grabbing a game-high 9 rebounds and setting a career high with 4 blocks in the game. Charlotte Furstall, a freshman at Superior from Plain, Wisconsin, doing well at the college level. Well, Marquette opens a 2-game homestand with tonight's game against Butler. The Golden Eagles swept both meetings last season. Coach Shaka Smart's team has an 11-4 record and is riding a home winning streak of 19 in a row. Wisconsin travels to Ohio State for a Big Ten road game tonight. The Badgers are looking for a 5th straight win. UW has had some success against the Buckeyes Buckeyes, winning 8 of the last 13 meetings. The team is ranked 13th in the latest NET rankings. More important, when seeding for the postseason tournament comes, Wisconsin's schedule is the 15th toughest in the country. Nebraska pulled a big upset last night, knocking off number one Purdue, 88-72 in men's college basketball. Iowa State pulled the upset over number two Houston, 57-53. Jay Crowder's return to the Bucks is getting closer. The 33-year-old veteran tells reporters he knows that the team's defense has to get better. He says the offense led by Giannis Antetokounmpo and Damian Lillard will take care of itself, but the team needs a lot of work on stopping opponents. The absence of Drew Holiday has been felt following the offseason trade. Milwaukee has lost 4 of its last 5 games and faces a big test when the Boston Celtics visit the Fiserv Forum coming up on Thursday. And some good notes to end on as we kind of dig out during the winter storm. It's time for baseball fans to start thinking about Major League Baseball resuming in just over a month. Friday is the deadline for teams and players to exchange arbitration figures. The Brewers' winter warm-up is on the schedule for this weekend in downtown Milwaukee. The international signing period will be starting Monday, and Hall of Fame voting results will be announced January 23rd. The big date is February 14th, when pitchers and catchers report to the in Phoenix for spring training. The first game for the Brewers against the Padres will be played February 24th out west. That's an update on sports. I'm Phil Mee.
Kubota has the industry-leading VX Series subcompact tractor. Hi, this is Rick from the Homesteader Store. VX Tractor is a real tractor in a small package.
When looking at the numbers, $27,700,000 was the $15 a month mark that Peter Leatherman said, don't go beyond that. So we knew that was our cap. When we looked at the things that we, based on the priorities, the top six priorities, the safety and security, ADA compliance, tech ed upgrades, air conditioning at the other two buildings, air quality, as well as energy efficiency savings, along with roofing, parking lots, and deferred maintenance, that came in at just under $25 million. Those were the top six priorities. So the real decision that the board had to make last night was, do we add the seventh priority, the auditorium upgrades, for roughly $2 million more, or do we stick to the top six? And the board voted, not an official resolution adoption, but to direct me to draft a resolution that would be a referendum in the amount of $27,160,000. That would address the top seven priorities as identified by the community. So this would include the auditorium upgrades, roughly $2 million of auditorium upgrades, things that need to happen. This is not the addition of a new dressing room or closed circuit television or anything like that. These are needs that we need to have in our auditorium simply to bring them up to date, okay, lighting and sound primarily. And that would come in for an average homeowner in the district, that would come in at under $15 a month, roughly $14.80. We'll get the official numbers back from our financial advisors, Baird, here in the coming days, but that will be the estimated amount. So what did the board decide? They decided to do this $27.1 million capital improvement project that will address all of the things that I just talked about. And they decided to do a $2.5 million non-recurring referendum. Okay, so a recurring referendum is one that will continue to stay on the books forever. All right, a non-recurring referendum is only on the community's pocketbook, if you will, for a set amount of time. And so the way this referendum would be structured is it would be $2.3 million in the 24-25 school year, 2.4 the following year, 2.5 the next year, and then in 27-28, $2.6 million. at the end of the 27-28 school year, that falls off the books. The taxpayers would not be responsible for that anymore. That gives the school district 4 years to earn the trust of the community, to show that we're being fiscally responsible with the money, that we're making improvements, that we're becoming the school district that our community wants us to be. And then we would have to go back to referendum at that point. It would allow us to reassess our needs. I mentioned declining enrollment earlier. In 27-28, that will be the last year of our last big class. They will be graduating, so we should have a very stable enrollment at that point, and then we can reassess our needs at that point. So in summary, it would be a non-recurring four-year referendum for operational purposes and a $27,160,000 capital improvements, and that would be at the expense total package of about $14.80 a month, just under $15 for the average homeowner in the Richland School District. So that's kind of the big story. I feel like I talked a lot. Hopefully that was good information, but that's kind of it in summary.
So it would be a basic yes or no question, and it would be on the April ballot then?
Yeah, so the final step that the board will have to do, as I mentioned, they directed me to draft resolutions. They saw some sample wording last night. They will make an official vote on the January 22nd board meeting, and that's when it will be officially placed on the April ballot. That has to be done. All school districts, all municipalities have until January 24th to make that final decision. We have a board meeting on the 22nd, so that's when we will make that decision. Once that happens, then it will be on the April 2nd spring election ballot, and there will essentially be two questions that voters will vote yes or no for.
Okay.
The first question will be, do you support increasing the revenue limit by $2.3 million in the first year, 2.4, 2.5, 2.6, and 27-28? While the tax implication will not be on the ballot, we will, as a school district, be making sure that everybody gets information. We'll hold plenty of listening sessions and informational sessions for people to get the right information. But that will essentially come with no tax increase, that operational referendum. The second question on the ballot will be the $27,160,000 capital improvement project and they'll see this wording on the ballot, specifically for safety and security, ADA compliance, tech ed upgrades at the RCHS, air conditioning at the buildings where needed, air conditioning and energy efficiency savings, roofing, parking lots, upgrades, auditorium upgrades, and general deferred maintenance. Okay, that will be the $27.16 million referendum question they will be asking, and that will come at a tax impact of around $14.80 per month to the average homeowner in Richland County. If both of those pass, the referendum, the operational, would go into effect next year. Construction of any sort would probably not happen until the following summer as they garner bids, get the bonds, which are loans that the district would have to secure, and go through all of that process. Maybe some would happen in that summer, but unlikely. So that's the general timeline of what will be happening next.
One could pass and one could fail, though, right?
That is correct. Yes, they are two independent questions, not related on either one.
Mm-hmm. All right. Good information, Steve. We have more to talk about on the morning show coming up in a moment with more from District Administrator Steve Ord on today's WRCO Morning Show. Steve Ord is here on our WRCO Morning Show talking about things going on in the Richland School District. Another thing we wanted to touch on was the upcoming calendar year, 24-25. You're probably looking ahead toward that now, aren't you?
Yeah, so every 2 years we adopt two calendars, 2 years in advance, so our families and our staff and our students all know what the calendar looks like. This was the year for that, to look at a two-year cycle. So we formed a calendar committee comprised by some staff members, teachers, and support staff and whatnot. And they proposed that we alter the traditional school calendar and that we go to what's called a PLC model calendar. PLC stands for Professional Learning Community. And what it is it's where student learning becomes the forefront of the conversations. And so let's just say that you and I are both science teachers. During PLC time, we might get together and you're teaching biology, I'm teaching biology, and we would get together and talk about what do our students, what do we want them to know, right? What do we want them to know as it relates to photosynthesis? How are we going to know that they know that, right? What assessments are we going to use? How are we going to relay the information? How are we going to ask the questions on a test? How are we going to make sure that they know it? What are we going to do if they don't know it, right? How are we going to revisit those topics? How do we identify those topics? And then what are we going to do if they do? What are we going to do if we have students that are getting this concept quicker? How are we going to differentiate, challenge them, provide more rigor? So those are really the four essential PLC questions that staff will ask. But in order for that to happen and for order for us to truly move the needle academically, we have to allocate the correct resources. Resources doesn't always mean money. Oftentimes it means time. And in the case of a calendar, it means we have to have time built into our calendar to have these kind of conversations, whether it's you and I as science teachers or you and I as third grade teachers or an entire wing or an entire staff, whatever that looks like. And so a PLC calendar, and many school districts around the area and throughout Wisconsin have early release calendars or late start calendars. This proposal came about that it would provide an early release day, one day a week throughout the school year, every week, as opposed to the sporadic early outs or full day in services that we have in our traditional calendar. For instance, this Friday, we have an early release for our students. Our teachers and staff will be doing some things, but they won't meet again until the next early release or full day in service. This provides a weekly systematic time for them to do that. The original proposal was that the students would get out at 1 o'clock. After sending out the draft calendar to various staff members and getting feedback, we realized 1 o'clock might be a little early and a little problematic for parents, specifically as it relates to daycare and provide coverage for their students. And so then it was explored. We also had the private schools included in this conversation. Then it was proposed, what if we did a 2 o'clock? We think that a 1 hour early release might be a little more palatable for our families. And so the current model, the way it sits and the proposed calendar presented was that every Wednesday, starting with basically the second week of school, right after Labor Day, all the way through Memorial Day, every Wednesday, students would get out at 2 p.m. at the elementary buildings, the primary school and the intermediate school, and 2:20 at the high school. Staff would then stay. And they would be focusing on PLC time in addition to some of the ongoing training that we have to do to comply with the law, that this would be more beneficial for our students and our student learning to really try to move the needle academically. It does pose a problem for parents, right? Because if you've got little ones, daycare providers, we definitely are in a better situation than we were a few short years ago. Daycare still could be problematic. And so we want to get the word out there quickly. The board did approve this calendar last night. Get the word out there for parents to be having conversations with their daycare providers that on Wednesday, students will children will basically be coming to those daycares an hour earlier than they normally would, and to make sure that is something that they can work out. One of the big questions that we have is we've got the STING program at the primary school and the intermediate school, the after-school program that is offered at our school. Traditionally, right now, when we have an early out, we don't have the STING program on those nights, okay, or on those afternoons. With this proposed calendar of these early outs, we would provide after-school coverage every Wednesday from the time school got out through the normal pickup time. And so that should help alleviate some burden to the families, and they want to be thinking about whether or not they want to take advantage of that as the STING signups happen this spring. But if they have other daycare, they want to be having those conversations with that. The question is the why, right? Why do we need to do this? I mentioned some of the benefits of it, but the reality is when you look at the 31 schools in CESA 3 is a cooperative of 31 schools that basically encompasses southwest Wisconsin, goes all the way down to the Illinois border, all the way down over to the Mississippi, Prairie du Chien, Platteville, everything in between. academically throughout. We rank 31 in many of our grades and many of our academic measures, 31 out of 31. To me, that's not acceptable. We have to do something different. We have to do something to move the needle academically, and we have to make student learning come to the forefront. And so this is going to be a systematic change, but we have to start allocating the right time for us to promote student learning and to really analyze if students are learning the material that we want them to learn. How do we know that they are? And then again, what are we going to do if they know it? And what are we going to do if they don't get it? What are we going to do if they don't understand it? And so this PLC is one of the things that will help move that, or at least that's the plan. Many of the school districts that have implemented PLC time have seen academic growth. We are hoping that we see that same academic growth, but it will be a very systematic time spent with our staff. We want staff families to make sure that they're aware that essentially every Wednesday, students will be getting out an hour early under the proposed calendar. With that, the final piece is the board did just approve a one-year calendar at this point, and so we do not have a 25-26 calendar out there. We're going to take the first half of next year, analyze the pros and cons, the impact that it has on families, and gather that feedback as we then we'll have to come back at this time next year and look at a 25-26 calendar. So it is on a one-year trial basis, and we would encourage feedback from families. But some of the initial feedback that we've had, families have said that while it might be problematic, it might actually be easier to know that every Wednesday they have to make these decisions as opposed to these sporadic, you know, random Thursday or random Friday where we have an early out or an all-day in-service. There won't be any of those things. Outside from a weather cancellation day, students will be in school every day, but they will have these early outs on Wednesdays for teachers to collaborate and focus on student learning.
All right, Steve. Thanks a lot.
You bet. Thank you. I appreciate it.
We'll see you next month.
You bet. It's been like since a year since I've seen you. So
yeah, I think
it's 2023.
Something like that.
So Happy New Year, by the way.
Steve Board, Richland District Administrator on our morning show today.
You are listening to WRCE 1450 AM, W299 CD, Richland Center.